Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of the Hedgeless Horseman website, which I will link below this interview. Now, Eric, I've talked to a number of people. A lot have outlined that, you know what, we are in the middle to tail end of tax loss selling season here. And quite frankly, we are seeing a fade in a lot of precious metals stocks. Some of the better ones, though, they have already started bouncing, so you can see a nice bottom formed in some of these individual stocks. But broadly, especially with some of the smaller companies, well, they're continuing to fade. If you don't have news right now to draw people into your stock, and quite frankly, if you haven't had news over the last 3 to 4 months, the stock has undoubtedly corrected. Eric, I know you always are trying to weigh the risk-reward of these companies, and you're not afraid to get into some of these micro-cap companies, but where currently are you seeing some, at least, value in the precious metals sector?
Well, I mean, as you say, we are in tax loss selling at the end of it, and at the same time, especially for the Northern Explorers, they are at their basically peak boring period, meaning that it's the peak time until, you know, something happens then in terms of being able to drill, etc. again. So I think that's a perfect storm for the people that are disciplined, and I mean, it's the hardest thing to do, just buy a stock and just, you know, wait for revaluation without a, you know, a specific catalyst, I guess, except announcement of drill start for some of these plays. But I do think it's the one of the best and easiest, in theory, alpha strategies you can deploy in this sector. Because, I mean, what is this sector about? It's basically about excitement, you know, that golden drill hole, getting rich tomorrow, etc. So people are always attracted to the hot drill place and, you know, the idea of a 10-bagger. And if you know there's no drilling in, let's say, 6 months, you basically know that it has no shot of being a 10-bagger for 6 months. And that's extremely boring to people. And that's why I think that the strategy of using, you know, playing the seasonality factor in these Northern Juniors, as well as taking advantage of the tax loss selling, which is basically, that's artificial selling, if you know what I mean. So when those two come together, I think there are some real bargains to be had. And I've already mentioned, like, Tectonic Metals, for example, which was trading at a enterprise value of like 2 million US, which is obscene. I think that's going to do well, you know, without any catalyst, just, you know, wait for the swing in sentiment, basically. And I've been picking up some Goliath Resources recently. I think they are one of the best risk rewards that I've seen in the form of a microcap stock, but they won't be drilling for X amounts of months either. But I'm happy to buy that now because I know that given how juicy their conceptual target looks, I have little doubt that that will be beat up going into, drill announcement or assays, etc., because it looks too good to pass up at this valuation.
So, Eric, what's your time frame on these investments then? Because it sounds like you're not looking for near-term catalysts. You are waiting for some sort of drill program, hoping, obviously, that the market is rising at that time so that the stocks, I guess, just get pulled higher?
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, it's one of those cases. If you buy a sleeper stock, for example, that at its, you know, peak boring, and it revalues 100%, am I against selling that? No. But if it doesn't go higher, I'm probably not sell it. So I mean, it's just when the question is, like Rick Rule likes to say, when the question is, you know, when, not if, that's the stuff I like. And of course, that again takes discipline because some of these sleepers might be, you know, dead for months to come. But who cares in the way of, okay, let's say a stock is trading at, you know, enterprise value of nada, pretty much, for 3 months. And you know that, you know, more exciting period is coming up in the next 3 months. I mean, then I would just be simply plowing more into that stock. But if it actually went, you know, higher within a month or whatever, maybe there's other sleepers out there that I can rotate into. Because again, I'm focusing on the risk reward and value. And if something changes, if price changes, for example, in a material way, I mean, that just decreases the opportunity, because obviously nothing has really happened with a company if there's no news out and it just, you know, goes up. And let's imagine that gold and silver are neutral as well during that period. So, because at the same time, the opportunity cost is every other stock. So if you, let's say you have six sleepers, one goes up 100% on no news, I mean, then you can, if that's not, I mean, ultra cheap still, then you can basically just, you know, reshuffle into a couple of other sleepers and wait for them to revalue. So, I mean, that's what I'm not looking for a specific time period per se. I'm just looking for, you know, a stock getting closer to fair value, because if a stock is cheap enough, like Inflection Resources, for example, I'm quite happy to be holding that into a bunch of drill results, because it's so cheap that nothing is priced in.
Okay, but there's a bit of a balance here between, say, something like Goliath and Inflection, because Inflection is actually out there drilling. Goliath, they're releasing news on surface samples, but I don't think that they have a drill program ongoing right now, or that they even had a drill program so that we could be waiting for drill results. So those, in all fairness, sound like fairly different place. Goliath may be more of a play on the market rising and this just being a micro cap that moves higher, rather than Inflection that can control some of their news flow, or at least has some near-term catalysts.
Exactly. I just brought that up as an example that, I mean, at the end of the day, price dictates if you should be in the stock or not. And of course, nobody has the perfect answer, because no one knows what the real odds of, a discovery is. But if like, for example, I really like Goliath right now, I really like Inflection Resources right now. If both of those were to double, I obviously don't like them as much. So And the opportunity goes up exponentially as price goes down. It doesn't go down linearly. So, I mean, if one of those companies would, go down 30% more, then I would, you know, ramp up my buying probably more than 30%. I might go from, just hypothetical here, like a 3% position to, 6% position or something like that. So I'm just trying to basically say that price dictates if I I'm going to get out of a stock or buy more, etc. And the thing is that, I mean, during the boring periods, etc., it's often at that time, especially around tax loss selling season, that you actually get these, you know, incredible bargains that you just pretty much know that as soon as someone sneezes at the stock, it's going to head higher. And you have, the fuse is lit basically that until the next field season. So you have a span there of like 6 months that, okay, at least I know that this is insanely cheap and it should really head higher within 6 months. And if it heads higher within 2 months, I'm happy to sell.
Okay. So I think that's a key distinction there too, is that you're not necessarily looking at these for a long-term hold, so when they do, say, double, then you're out pretty quickly looking for probably another stock that you think is undervalued or simply has not moved. But what about on the downside? That, fine, if a stock sells off, when does it get to the point, or what has to happen for you to throw in the towel and say, fine, you know what, maybe this play isn't working. Maybe management isn't going to move this stock forward. And even though I think it's cheap, these things can always get cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I rank people so high. I mean, you want people that actually want to succeed and, you know how to succeed, or at least shareholders that will keep them honest on course, etc. So I don't think I'm really invested in any stocks where I think that, you know, that's a real risk. I mean, most of the time they'll either they have such a good project that it's, not that there are any guarantees, but they will do more work and will have the funding or already has the funding, etc. So that's the stuff I want to, you know, see basically in place beforehand. But again, I mean, that was just an example if they revalue 100%. I mean, usually I'm almost never out of a position totally, not if I really like the stock, but taking profits, sure. I mean, if Inflection Resources were to double before anything happens, basically all else equal, no news. And that goes for every one of these stocks. And that goes for the downside as well. If nothing has changed, if Inflection were to be cut in half, for example, without any news, I mean, I'll probably just load up big time. I mean, I was close to, I was tempted to put like 40% of my portfolio into White Rock Minerals when it reached around 40 cents, just because it was such a no-brainer that I can't see how they would mess that up. Because I mean, the chop up value was so much higher than the enterprise value that there's very little chance of losing money. And that's how I, you know, go about things. When the risk reward gets really skewed, I jack up my position big time. So, I mean, I haven't, for example, had many 10 baggers, but I've basically 10 bagged my portfolio over the last 5 years. So how did I do that? It's what, I mean, it's due to me basically being super aggressive when the, you know, price is really low and the risk reward is really high. Because then, I mean, at some point, the risk tends to skew to the upside, especially if it is a serious company. And it can be in tax loss selling or whatever. And then I just, you know, can unload, et cetera, as it revalues closer to fair value. Not that I'm going to dump the whole thing. But I mean, if you're in, let's say, 20% in a stock or whatever, and that doubles, I mean, that's a meaningful, obviously obscene portion of your portfolio. So you have to scale down.
Now, Eric, what about these stronger companies or some of the better or what are classified as better exploration companies? They, too, have pulled back some fairly significantly from their highs of 4 to 5 months ago. Why not get into some of these more established names that have more support, have sometimes a better management team? Why drive down so much into these microcaps?
No, it's relative valuation. I mean, if the some part of the sector is totally bombed out relative to another part of the sector, I mean, I think that's where the opportunity is. And I mean, the miners, the large miners, for example, I mean, they haven't, you know, retraced that much. They're not, you know, super cheap. But so, I mean, is it anything wrong in, you know, buying stocks like, I don't know, Barrick Gold or Franco Nevada or even smaller companies than that? No. For sure. But I mean, if something happens and I mean, if a few junior miners, you know, correct 30%, that might be a total no-brainer compared to anything else. And that's why I've also been rather, you know, hesitant to buy many of the silver juniors, because in relative terms, I thought that most of them were overvalued and have been overvalued compared to their gold peers. Because I mean, the gold price has done a lot better than the silver price, obviously. And still, it's the gold juniors that are, you know, chronically depressed or have been. But I've been starting to dabble in some silver juniors as well. But again, it's like the opportunity cost is anything else, basically. And if there's part of the sector that's, you know, for some reason very underpriced, then I'll take a stab at that, because that's where the biggest opportunities are. And for some reason, the silver juniors have been, I mean, rather hot, despite the, you know, price action in silver. And some are just riding that, and they've done really well because silver juniors haven't really retraced, and they've kept going higher because sentiment was getting better. But I'm not a momentum trader, really, and I'm not really a beta player. I try to find, you know, where the fundamental says that, you know, me buying here is, you know, skews the risk to the upside, but it might take months for it to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Eric, we're going to wrap it up there. I hope that made some sense to everybody, but I get what you're saying. You are driving down, you're seeing better value in some of these micro caps, and they do provide the most torque heading higher. I just really believe you need to be careful getting into some of these stocks, and you do need to follow along. These stocks, the microcap stocks, are not ones that you just put money into and forget about in your portfolio. You do need to manage those investments because they can move quickly, both up and down. And you need to make sure that when they do move up, that you're taking some profits, I think, and not getting too attached to any story, especially small stories and microcap stories. Eric, good chatting with you, buddy. As I mentioned, I'll post a link to your website below this interview, and we'll chat again next week. Have a great rest of your week there, Eric.
Those were good points. The same to you.